From Redeemer Broadcasting, this is Holding All Things Together for this final weekend in January. I'm Dan Elmendorf.
And I'm Calvin Carter. 2 weeks ago, anti-ICE protesters stormed a church in St. Paul, Minnesota, disrupting services and showing hostility toward worshipers. In addition to interrupting the service, they harassed members of the congregation, even singling out the pastor. These actions of anti-ICE protesters reveal a troubling hostility toward Christians and those who gather to worship. The video is available online, and it is most troubling. It makes us wonder how our own church leadership would handle such a disruption, should it occur in our own church. This assault demonstrated a blatant disregard for the sanctity of worship and for houses of worship in general. It's clear that religious liberty is under siege here in these United States. Joining us today to dissect this news item is our journalist friend, Robert H. Knight.
But the larger issue here is, where do these people think they have the liberty to go in and disrupt a church service? That's not a government building. That's not public land. That's a church. And they have no business coming in. That's not protected free speech.
Also ahead, Pastor Bill Shisco discusses false teachers who come in sheep's clothing, but who will devour you. We are to have discernment towards them and beware of them. Later in the program, writer Jerry Wiss recounts the envy, strife, and favoritism of Jacob's household as Leah and Rachel competed for the covenant heir's attention, each seeking to be the matriarch. It was messy, and yet God worked even through this morass to effect His will and fulfill His promises. Finally, we'll take another look at this week in history. All this just ahead on Holding All Things Together.
In the Sermon on the Mount, we come to Matthew chapter 7 and verse 15. Now remember, Jesus has said, "Judge not that you be not judged." That's not an absolute. You have to be discerning. And here Jesus says in Matthew 7 and verse 15, "Beware of false prophets who come to you in sheep's clothing." They look like the Lord's people, and they may even sound to some extent like the Lord's people, but inwardly are ravenous wolves. In other words, they devour. Now remember that we're coming to the conclusion on the Sermon on the Mount, and Jesus is taking all these things that he said about two ways and two treasures and two goals, and he says, you've got to make a choice. You have to make a decision. And here Jesus says, beware of false prophets. There's truth and there's error. Now, prophets were those that gave the word of God by special revelation. Now, we don't have prophets other than the prophecies given in Holy Scripture. But we do have teachers. In the book of 2 Peter 2 and verse 1, Peter says that. He says, now we deal with what we would call true or false teachers. And false teachers are dangerous. They come in sheep's clothing, but they're actually people who will devour you. Well, how do you know the difference between a true and a false teacher? Now, brothers and sisters and friends, there's few things about which I am more concerned as a pastor than this. Who's teaching you? What kind of training does that person have? Does that person have training so that he can, the language in the book of 1 Timothy, cut a straight path through the words of God? Is he trained so that he can give you words of sound doctrine? What's the training of those who teach you? What's the doctrinal standard? What is the doctrine the person who teaches you believe? That's one of the reasons I love Redeemer Broadcasting. They're committed to the historic creeds and confessions of the Protestant Reformation. What's the doctrinal standard of the one who teaches you? Is that person giving you more imagination and illustration than translation of the scriptures and exposition of it? Ask that carefully. And how does what the one who teaches you line up with other faithful teachers? Now, it's also by fruits that you know them. But please, Jesus said not only be careful how you hear, but be careful what you hear, because your souls are going to live or die forever.
On the Zoom line with us today is Robert H. Knight, journalist. And Robert, it's great to have you back with us.
Always good to be on with you, Dan.
Robert, in the news, I saw something the other day that really bothered me. I'm sure you're on top of it, and that is there was multiple leftists that barged into a church that was having a worship service in the St. Paul, Minnesota area, and completely disrupted the worship service. And I was wondering if you saw that and if you had any comments about it.
Yeah, both. I did see it, and I listened to the interview with Don Lemon, who was debating the pastor afterward. It's shocking. This is what communists do. They try to bring violence into otherwise peaceful places and then blame it on the people who are already there. These demonstrators came parading in. They came up both aisles of the church. They started chanting the name of Rene Good, don't shoot." I mean, it was very reminiscent of what they did in Ferguson, Missouri, in 2014, right, when they did the hands up, don't shoot narrative for Michael Brown, who was not putting his hands up, was not meekly surrendering, but was going for the officer's gun, and they turned him into a martyr, like they did George Floyd.
Yes.
And now they've turned Rene Good into a martyr. But the larger issue here is, where do these people think they have the liberty to go in and disrupt a church service? That's not a government building. That's not public land. That's
no.
A church.
That's
and,
right.
Yeah, they have no business coming in. That's not protected free speech.
No, I'm glad you said that.
Yeah, if you listen to the conversation that Don Lemon, former CNN anchor, has with them, with the young pastor, it's nonsensical. He keeps talking about their right to freedom of speech and so forth. I'm thinking, wait a minute. Nobody has a right to come into your place and disrupt it.
Mm-hmm.
This is totally different from a demonstration, say, on a public sidewalk outside. That is allowed. That shouldn't be stopped. But this is kind of scary.
It is.
Watching these left-wing mobs just take matters into their own hands and try to provoke a violent incident.
Oh, yeah. And it got me thinking, those of us in a Christian church and who have elders, I'm not sure our elders have thought through something like this. It may be a good idea to now to think through what happens when you're in a worship service and belligerent people come in, they disrupt the worship service and all of that. How do you handle that? And it may not be a bad idea at this point to sit down in the session meeting and discuss it.
That is a very good idea, Dan. Every church should have a contingency plan for something like this so it doesn't get erupt into something worse.
Yeah.
I would think the first thing they have to do is assign people who are well-versed in security to protect the church.
Yes.
On a regular basis. Every Sunday they ought to have somebody carrying. I'm sorry to say that, but sometimes that's what stops a mass shooting.
Well, I'm glad to hear you say that.
Oh, yeah. Well, I know the church I attend has several people who are carrying,
yeah,
and they've had to do that.
That's right.
The other thing is, if the minute this happens, they should call the police, because those people have no right to interrupt a church service.
No.
In fact, there are laws in the books in some states that make that a special crime. Going into a religious sanctuary, whether it's a synagogue, a church, or a mosque, and raising Cain.
Yeah.
You can't do that. That's illegal.
Yes. It's true.
So they ought to bring the authorities right in immediately.
Yeah.
And arrest them. Arrest them all.
Oh, absolutely.
And so we can't We can't pretend this is just going to go away.
You're going to say pussyfoot around, and my dad used to use that all the time.
Yeah, I was about to use it, and I thought, is this okay for Dan's program?
Yeah, well, today we're talking with Robert H. Knight, our friend. He's a journalist, and he follows the news much better than I do. And I figured you had seen this, Robert, and you'd have some thoughts about it.
Yeah, I even sent it around on X.
Yes, there you go.
I reposted it. People need to see this, to see what we're up against. This isn't about constitutional rights. It's not about illegal immigration, even. It's about a communist revolution unfolding right there in Minneapolis. Yeah. And, of course, also in New York City, where they're instituting this stuff.
Oh, man.
And in my state of Virginia, I'm really worried now because Democrats took over all three branches of government, and they began filing bills. And there are like over 20 bills that are horrendous that have already been filed.
Yeah.
Governor Abigail Spanberger, who campaigned as a moderate but isn't, showed up yesterday for her swearing in a suffragette white uniform. Mm. Like women are still oppressed in this country. You know, it's just part of the left's narrative.
I'm sorry, but it's laughable.
It really is. She rescinded an order by her predecessor, Governor Glenn Youngkin, for Virginia authorities to cooperate with federal immigration officials.
Mm-hmm.
In other words, she's turning Virginia into a sanctuary state.
Yes.
And I think there are bills already filed for giving free health benefits to illegals, to free food.
Lord have mercy.
All kinds of bills. Well, here's the worst part. They have something like five bills designed to destroy election integrity.
Yeah.
They did away with voter ID last time the Democrats were in charge. Now they're doing things like criminalizing you if you question a voter registration that you think may be invalid.
Wow.
I mean, get your head around that. You're not even supposed to question anymore.
No.
Yeah.
They want mindless obedience.
They really do, Dan, and they have a hate speech ordinance coming. And it's so far-reaching that a friend of mine called me and said, are you ready to be arrested because of your column and the views you hold?
Oh, my.
This could be interpreted as hate speech because you're being critical of certain groups.
Yes, yes.
So it's the left is really desperately trying to seize power any way they can, whether it's in the streets or through the ballot box, and I think through voter fraud. I just can't believe this many people still vote for Democrats when they want to put boys and girls sports and open the border and do all the things that they have done over the last few years that have alienated so many people.
I am convinced, Robert, that we have massive voter fraud still occurring, and I hope we can get to the bottom of it. But it'll take some legislators with a spine, with a backbone. And I'm telling you, the Republicans also, the rhinos, I call them, Republican in name only, they're just as bad.
They are enablers.
Yeah.
They allow the Democrats to run roughshod over the constitutional rights of others. And they say, well, I don't want to be too forceful because it'll look like I'm mean. And then the Democrats might be mean in return when they, cut it, come off it. They're going to do what they're going to do.
Absolutely. It's time to
put up a fight.
Time to get a hold of ourselves and say, you know what? Enough is enough. And be more like a mother hen protecting her little ones or a mother bear protecting her cubs. You can't let this stuff happen. You just can't let it happen. Robert, anything else you want to share with us? We got 1 minute left.
Well, I think along those lines, Dan, people need to get their kids out of the government schools.
Yes.
And a lot of people think, well, my school's okay. It's not like those other ones. I'm sorry, the left-wing teachers' unions control all the government schools in the country.
They do, actually.
Yeah, and they basically are feeding kids a secularist, anti-American ideology along with all kinds of sexual agendas.
Yeah.
And, you know, your kid is there how many hours a day, and you're supposed to counter that with a Sunday school class?
Yeah, it ain't going to happen.
You should sacrifice whatever it takes, get your kids out
absolutely
of the government schools. And my hat's off to the Christian teachers in government schools who are doing their best
sure
to hold the line and try to be real good educators. You know, I'm not indicting them. It's the system.
No, it's a system.
It's been taken over by left-wing zealots.
The other day I went with my wife to pick up two of our grandchildren from a Christian school. It's in the Pine Bush area. I was so impressed. It was orderly, and you drive up and the lady knows you. They call you by name, and then they have the two children come out. It's highly controlled and safe. They're watching out for all the kids. And then when we drive out to the road, there's actually a cop assigned to this school every day watching out for the kids. And I'm thinking, yeah, this is the way it's supposed to be done.
That's right. And then these schools see themselves as partners with the parents.
Oh, yeah.
The government schools see parents as an obstacle, an adversary even.
Yeah,
because the parents don't like their agenda.
Now, we're out of time, but please give us a reference where people can go and read more. Robert Knight.
Yeah, they can go to roberthknight.com. There's an H in the middle there, and Knight is spelled K-N-I-G-H-T. roberthknight.com. And you get my latest articles, and there's a bookstore there as well. And I also send my column out every Monday morning to a personal email list. And you can get on it just by sending me an email at robertknight4@gmail.com. Just say, sign me up.
Very worthwhile. Robert Knight, my brother, thank you so much for joining us today.
Thank you, Dan. God bless you.
You too. Envy, strife, and favoritism are relational characteristics we may expect to see enacted in a television drama, more so than in a family united to the living God, who makes promises to his people and delivers on them. And yet these are the marks of Jacob's household as Leah and Rachel compete for the covenant heir's attention, each seeking to be the matriarch. It's messy. And yet God works even through this morass to effect his will and fulfill his promises, as Jerry Wiss explains today on Holding All Things Together. Jerry is a frequent contributor to Holding All Things Together and is a writer for Christian Renewal magazine.
As we continue in Genesis, coming now to chapter 30, we're made privy to some of the drama in Jacob's household. Born of envy, strife, and a less than healthy kind of competition between Leah and Rachel. Jacob is not innocent in this matter either, since his favoritism of Rachel serves as the trigger of much of the emotional messiness in his household. The scriptures have much to say about envy and strife, and not only in the New Testament. The Proverbs are replete with teaching on these. We know, too, that favoritism is declaimed in both Old and New Testaments in places such as Leviticus 19 and Deuteronomy 1, and also in James 2. Jacob's favoritism, we will see, extends to Joseph, the firstborn son of Rachel, which will also trigger envy, strife, and an upending of peace in the covenant household. Nonetheless, in all of these situations, as relationally onerous as they are, God turns evil for good, though there is much difficulty and suffering in the process. The lesson for us should be clear. Avoiding envy, strife, and favoritism, all acts of unrighteousness or sin in God's sight, will bear good, peaceable fruit, whereas stewing in and advancing these will occasion just the opposite. The strife in Jacob's household between the wives, Leah and Rachel, is not entirely about, even though it focuses on, childbearing, particularly sons. The drama we see in Genesis 30 can be intense, and yet it is from this drama that God establishes the 12 tribes of Israel, his covenant people in the Old Testament. Unable to bear children, Rachel gives her servant Bilhah to Jacob, as we'd seen earlier that Sarah had done with her servant Hagar to Abraham. Not to be outdone, Leah, after she'd stopped bearing children, gave her servant Zilpah to Jacob to bear yet more children, and so two more sons are born. But as it turns out, Leah is not done bearing children. After a tit-for-tat agreement between the sisters, having to do with Leah sharing some mandrake roots with Rachel, Rachel tells her sister it's her turn with Jacob. As a result, over time, another two sons and a daughter are born. Finally, Rachel gives birth to Joseph. Each son bears a name reflecting the emotional state of his mother when he is born. For example, Issachar, born to Leah, means wages, something earned from what she'd previously done, at least to her mind. Joseph means, may he add, a request of Rachel for another son, which God will answer later with Benjamin. In all of this hair-pulling strife and family drama, we see firstly that the covenant God hears the women's cries and answers them, even though they are locked in a competitive frenzy in the household. Through this, the Lord increases Jacob's house, as he had promised to do in Genesis 28, so that the covenant household is established to later become a numerous people. Also, the sovereign God is not limited in his unfolding of history by the sins of those through whom he is working. Though not the author of sin, God uses it to further his purposes. This, of course, is never an excuse to sin. As the adage goes, it's never a good idea to have two women in the same kitchen. Young married women, especially after children are born, know this well when mothers or mothers-in-law are in their homes, perhaps more than they should be. This is why the Lord says a man shall leave his mother and father and cling to his wife, the two becoming one flesh. A new household is established without cutting ties to the old one, but with the realization that the old one is no longer the household of either the new husband or the new wife. A new household is established, and yes, parental advice should be welcome, but the new household must also be allowed to grow through its own trial and error in order to form its own identity. Because there are two wives in Jacob's household, that establishment with its boundaries is not easily determined and so remains bifurcated.
Time once again for This Week in History. January 26, 1945. The son of Texas sharecroppers, Audie Murphy is wounded in France during World War II and is subsequently awarded the Medal of Honor. The most decorated soldier in the war, Murphy won 37 medals and decorations, including the Distinguished Service Cross, the Silver Star with Oak Leaf Cluster, the Legion of Merit, and the Croix de Guerre with palm. January 27, 1943. Bombers from the U.S. 8th Air Force, dispatched from their bases in England, fly the first American bombing raid against the Germans, targeting the Wilhelmshaven port. January 28, 1986. Seven astronauts, including Krista McAuliffe, a teacher from New Hampshire, perish as the Challenger space shuttle explodes just a minute into its 10th flight. January 29, 1936, in Cooperstown, New York, the Baseball Hall of Fame announces the election of five charter members: Ty Cobb, Babe Ruth, Honus Wagner, Christy Mathewson, and Walter Johnson. and January 30th, 1933. Thinking the move will mollify the upstart National Socialist German Workers' Party, President Paul von Hindenburg names Adolf Hitler as Chancellor of Germany. Hitler soon took the presidency as well and incorporated his party title of Führer as leader of the Third Reich. That was This Week in History. Events as we recorded them, as God ordained them.
That's our program for this week. Thanks for joining us. Holding All Things Together is a production of Redeemer Broadcasting, and the views expressed are those of the participants. If you'd like to contact us for any reason, we would love to hear from you. Our email address is ministry@redeemerbroadcasting.org. For Holding All Things Together, I'm Dan Elmendorf.
And I'm Cal Carter.
God willing, see you next week.